Welcome to Recalculating America, a program dedicated to small business in America. Recalculating will help you, the American small business owner, build a new business or help you to grow your existing one. Each week, experts will give you useful information about starting your new business, and you will hear from professionals selected to help you grow your business. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest and has many years of experience helping small businesses build and grow their businesses. Now he is sharing his ideas with you over the air. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money. He specializes in helping small business owners make their money work as hard as they do. Now, your host, Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins.
Good morning and welcome to this edition of Recalculating. I'm Dan Perkins and I'm your co-host along with Don Mazzella, the author of Recalculating. This program is dedicated to helping small business leaders increase profits. We draw our name from the book of the best-selling author Don Mazzella, my co-host, which features contributions of more than 100 presidents, experts, leaders from all who offer ways to grow your small business. Don?
No, you know, everyone's talking about the economy. Hopefully it'll get jump-started under President Trump. We have a very interesting guest today to talk about it. Dan, do you want to tell us about our guest?
Sure. We have with us today Greg Powell, Fundbox Head of Product Marketing. He's going to talk about the company, a study that it had done. And Greg, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with Fundbox, and then we'll ask you some important questions.
Yeah. So I've been with Fundbox for just under a year, leading product and brand marketing. I started my career at Clorox, where I worked in brand marketing for a few brands such as Glad, Hidden Valley, and Brita. But I felt the pull of Silicon Valley, so I moved over to Intuit, where I held a variety of marketing roles for the QuickBooks brand. And your listeners may be familiar with QuickBooks as the accounting software for small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
It was there that I learned a lot about the importance of cash flow to small businesses and how critical and vital it is to small businesses, and that lack of cash is the top reason why small businesses fail. So I had a lot of empathy for what small businesses were going through, and in joining Fundbox, I combined that passion for small business and the importance they play in our local economies with an opportunity to help them secure funding to avoid those pretty dangerous gaps in cash flow that can be threaten their livelihood.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I saw a report recently about the number one reason why businesses fail during the first 5 years, and the answer to that question is insufficient operating funds. So tell us about what Fundbox does and how it can help our listeners.
Yeah, so Fundbox helps small businesses grow by giving them access to credit in just a few clicks. So customers register for a free account at fundbox.com, and then they can connect either their accounting solution or their bank account, and we use that data to determine if they're a good fit for Fundbox credit. If they're approved, they can draw funds, and the money will be in their bank accounts as soon as the next business day. It's very easy, very, very flexible. They don't get stuck paying interest on huge term loans. They only draw the amount that they need and when they need it.
Would it be inappropriate to call this a line of credit account?
No, you could call it a line of credit. We have different ways of serving our customers. A line of credit is one of those ways.
Mm-hmm.
Financing is another way.
Do you are you a finance company, or do you have a relationship with a bank that provides the capital? What is your source of funds to loan to your customers?
Yeah, we do have a relationship with a bank, a credit facility that we do draw funds from.
And so you have a general line of credit, and then you can parcel it out to individual clients?
That's right. And then we also have a bank partnership that helps us loan the money.
You says here you did a survey. Can you help us what you found in your survey?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know from some of our prior research, so we work with small businesses all the time. One of the things that we really, really try and focus on is develop a deep empathy for small business and kind of what they're going through so that we can build a product that that matches their needs. And we know from some of our prior research that getting paid slowly is a really big problem for small businesses, especially invoice-based small businesses, those that take invoice as a form of payment or that invoice their customers to get paid. And our estimates show that small businesses are owed collectively across the U.S. $825 billion in unpaid invoices, which is equivalent to 5% of the GDP. So it's a really big problem. In the most recent study, and so that really helped us understand the macro size, the macro scale of the problem. In this most recent study, we wanted to take a deeper look and dig a little bit deeper about how these slow payments were affecting individual small businesses. So we conducted a survey and asked some small business owners where they cut spending when payments are slow. And what we found really surprised us, because the first thing they're likely to cut is their own salary. And 79%, and it wasn't even close, 79% said they would cut their own pay. After that, there's a really big drop-off. 23% said that they would cut back on hiring new employees. 23% also said they would cut back on investing in new equipment. And 20% said they would cut marketing spend. And so what's interesting about this is that they're cutting their own pay really to preserve their growth. We quoted one customer in the study saying that I can either not pay myself or reduce marketing cost. Not paying myself is first, because reducing marketing cost is about equivalent to hitting a self-destruct button. So they don't pay themselves first. If they have to make deeper cuts beyond their own salaries, that's when they move into expenses directly related to growth, like marketing, new employees, new equipment. And so this really ties back to the fact that most small businesses are trying to grow when they come to Fundbox. When they're seeking financing for their business, most of the time it's because they want to grow. They're getting paid slowly and they want to grow, but they can't unless they have the funding to do so.
Who is your typical customer? What do they look like?
We have a few different types of customers. Professional services and trades. So in professional service, you imagine like an advertising agency or like a web design firm, or accountants use us. And typically, you know, in what ties all these different groups together is they operate in an environment where they invoice their customers. Usually their work is time bound, and they invoice their customers at the end of that project. But their expenses continue as they wait on payment. And so for all of those folks, they usually their highest, for the professional services companies, usually their highest expense is salary. In very expensive markets, sometimes it's rent. On the trade side of things, we work with a lot of contractors, plumbers, electricians, landscapers, janitorial services, small businesses. Again, they invoice their customers. They do project-based work for their clients. When the work is done, they invoice them. A lot of times, the capital constraints that they have are involved with material costs and supplies. So these guys, when they start a new job, need to buy all the equipment up front, all the supplies up front, before they can start a new project. So access to funds is critical to growing. And finally, we also work with a lot of manufacturers. And with manufacturers, it's small business manufacturers. You know, if they were to get a big order from, say, Target or Walmart, they'd have to ramp up their inventory pretty significantly in order to fulfill that order. And that also requires money. And so we hear from a lot of small businesses who manufacturers who say, you know, like so-and-so called me, I need money now because I need a new piece of equipment or need to buy the raw materials to turn this into inventory I can ship off to this new customer.
Don?
I have several questions, but I thought it was ironic, Dan, that your contribution to recalculating was a piece that said, make sure you pay yourself. And here he's saying, if I heard Greg correctly, that the one area that people cut back on is their own salaries. Did I hear that right, Greg?
You did. That's the first thing that they cut.
And it's one of the things perhaps you shouldn't cut. But let me ask, Greg, I want to be clear on this. Let's say I have a payroll to meet, and I'm $5,000 short of that payroll. If I'm tied up with you and you've given me a credit line of, let's say, $10,000, I can, in effect, call you up or somehow or other contact Fundbox, and I will know that $5,000 will be in my account tomorrow. Did I hear that right?
The next business day. Yep. You log into fundbox.com and you log into your account, and it's as simple as clicking a button. You find out how much available credit you have, and you either advance an invoice or you draw funds from your line of credit. It's really, really straightforward and really simple. And that's one of the things that our customers really give us positive feedback on is how easy it is to use.
Well, it is, but let me ask you, what is your interest rate and how do you charge?
We don't call it an interest rate. We charge fees. And what we do is the fees start at 4.66% of the amount that you're drawing. And the fees can vary depending on a variety of factors. And the 4.66%, the starting rate of 4.66% is on the amount that you've drawn, and you pay it back over 12 or 24 weeks. The fee structure is flat. So most loans, when you get a loan, the amortization schedule is the fees are heavily, the interest payments you make are heavily front-loaded. At Fundbox, we do things a little bit differently. The fee structure is completely flat. So in week one, you're paying the same in fees as you do in week 12 or week 24, depending on how long you choose to pay it back. And this is important because there are no prepayment penalties if you want to repay early. And so if you were to, say, pay us back on week six, you'd be saving 50% of the fees as opposed to a much smaller percent on a traditional loan. So that flat fee structure we think makes us pretty unique in the marketplace.
Very much. But then I guess what's your recourse if the company doesn't repay? I mean, what do you loan against? Assets? Personal guarantee? What is it you loan against?
It depends on the customer. What we try and do first is work it out with the customer. Our first line of defense is actually to reduce their credit limit. Most of the customers that we work with really don't want that at all, and so they work with us very quickly to resolve any disputes. We do have a resolutions department that will, you know, that help us collect, but we try not to let it get to that point because we really want to work with our customers to keep them on board and to make sure that they do pay us back.
Dan, I have one more question. Have you noticed a pickup in people in business activity over the last 3 months, or have you seen any sort of movement one way or the other in terms of your business and your client's business?
Well, we've been growing very quickly, so it's hard to separate out a lot of variables on exactly, you know, external factors that are propelling the growth forward. But because we've been growing so quickly over the last year or two, in terms of our customers' businesses, it's tough for us to say exactly how, it's tough for us to say exactly how well they're doing, but we've definitely seen our business consistently grow over the past 3 months. Yes.
What kind of businesses are coming in now?
It's, because of the nature of our product, we work with a lot of invoice-based businesses. That's where a lot of the pain that these small businesses are feeling comes from with the slow payments and not being able to grow because their customers are taking a long time to pay them back. And so it's really a lot of those invoice-based businesses that I mentioned earlier, the professional services, trades, and the small business manufacturers. Those are a lot of who we see on a day-to-day basis.
Are you seeing, following up on Don's question, are you seeing people tell you, or hearing, I should say, as opposed to seeing, hearing people tell you that collections are picking up, or are they unchanged so far in the first quarter?
I don't think we've heard that. I mean, I don't think we've specifically heard that. I can't say that we've heard that specifically come from our customers.
What is your do you have an expectation corporately about what you think is going to happen to the economy and how it will impact your business?
No. Really, with the current, administration, there's a lot of uncertainty right now about how fintech companies, financial technology companies, will be sort of affected. And so we want to work with regulators to come to a solution that helps small businesses, and are more than happy to work with anyone with the ability to help small businesses succeed and prosper.
So if we go back to your structure of your company, what area of the state or federal government regulates you?
Well, it depends.
Or does anybody?
The regulations, so right now it is state by state. We're not a bank, and so there are state by state regulations. And this is something that a lot of fintech companies, are faced with, is the fact that the regulations do vary on a state by state basis. The Office of the Comptroller of the Currency has floated a proposal. This is within the Treasury Department, to provide fintech companies with national banking charters. But that started up during the previous administration. Let's see, when did it start? That proposal was floated, I think, late last year, maybe early this year. So it's unclear where that's going to go and whether or not that proposal is going to get is going to get passed.
Greg, I didn't. I didn't hear what you said. You said syntax? Or did I misunderstand you?
Fintech is the term used for financial technology companies. This is the group of businesses, startups. Oftentimes they're startups that are using technology to provide faster and in some cases better results for their customers than, traditional financial products.
Okay. So that you would be probably would be regulated by the State Banking Commission or Consumer Protection Agency or something like that, as opposed to being under federal control.
That's right. Right now, there are no federal laws that regulate fintech companies, but there has been one that has been proposed by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, OCC, that that suggests that fintech companies could get national banking charters. If this happened, then we would no longer, then we would be under federal regulation instead of the state-by-state regulations that we currently do. And I just like to point out that because we work with small businesses, we're not under consumer regulations.
Okay, so you don't, because you don't have a retail, you don't deal with the consumer, you deal with the businesses, you're exempt from
that's
that.
Right.
Okay. And we've got about 2 minutes left here.
I have a question, Dan.
Okay, go ahead.
How do you get your customers? And is by referral? How do people know about you and get things done? And by the way, what is your website for people? We're talking with Greg Powell. He's head of product marketing for Funbox. But Greg, what's your website?
The website is fundbox.com. That's FUNDBOX.com. And we actually have a special promotion for your listeners. That's fundbox.com/radio. And they can get a discount if they sign up through that URL.
So what a great softball question he gave you, Greg, as the marketing guy. How do you market? So if anybody in the company should know the answer to that question, it's you.
That's right. So we use a variety of different outreach methods to find customers. We use kind of the online acquisition tools, such as, you know, Google AdWords and Facebook. We also do referrals. And we also work closely with our partners and try and reach customers through our partner relationships with companies, with a variety of partner organizations.
Wow.
We're partners with companies like QuickBooks, FreshBooks. We're partners with Zoho and Xero, Sage, and all of the major accounting platforms.
Terrific. So the customer, the potential customer, has to give you access to their income statement, their balance sheet, before you consider them for a loan.
No, it's really, really easy. Our underwriting methodology is very unique. They can give us access to their accounting data, where we would review many different data points within their accounting, or they can connect through their bank account, their business bank account. If they connect to their business bank account, then we're not looking at their accounting data. We're actually looking at their banking data. So it's up to them how they choose to, and that's it. Just several clicks. And we can underwrite them and get them a credit decision within a few hours. Very, very easy.
Terrific. Well, Greg
Powell,
head of marketing, product marketing for Funbox, thank you for being with us today. And perhaps we can have you back in the future to give us updates on any new developments. Thanks for joining us.
I'd love that. Thanks for having me.
Don't let hackers get your data. Email is insecure and can't handle large files. Instead, use Biscom's Secure File Transfer product. Military-grade security that's as easy to use as email, and it can handle attachments of any size. Visit Biscom.com for your free trial and make sure your private communications stay private. That's BISCOM.com.
Welcome back to Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful. Now it's time for Money in Motion. Dan Perkins is our resident expert in making the money you earn work as hard as you do. Here is Dan Perkins.
Well, lots of things to talk about in this segment today, and we probably won't get to all of them. Big concern about the attack in London yesterday. How it's going to affect things as it relates to, say, Brexit in Britain. And ISIS reported this morning that they took responsibility for the attack yesterday. Interest rates fell, especially in the Treasury market. Whenever you have uncertainty, money moves to the safest haven, and the Treasury is the safest haven. I think that one of the things that surprised me over the last week since the Fed raised interest rates, the conventional wisdom and the impact here is the impact on our listeners, Don, is their cost of money. The anticipation was that with the Fed raising interest rates a quarter of 1%, that we would have an increase in rates across the board for both consumers and businesses. And actually, rates are actually on the 10-year are lower today than they were before the Fed raised interest rates. Now, the Fed doesn't control the 10-year or the 30-year. It basically controls the short end. But what I'm pointing out is that there doesn't seem to be a belief that the Fed is going to necessarily do the other two that they're looking at in 2017. Part of the uncertainty of that is what's going to happen tonight on the floor of the House. There are some pundits, I don't necessarily agree with all of them, that the outcome of this vote on replacement and repeal of Obamacare, this first step through the House, which by interesting, they're not calling it Trump Care now. The media is calling it Ryan Care because he's behind the bill. If this doesn't pass tonight, some pundits are saying, and I don't necessarily agree with them, as I said, say that the president's whole agenda may be in jeopardy. We may not get tax reform. We may not get relief on Obamacare and many other things that were integral in what the president wanted to do may not happen if we can't get through this. I think it's going to be a squeaker vote. I think the Republicans understand that if they can't bring something out of the House, America is going to be very, very angry. And if we don't get a vote, passing vote tonight, I would look for the market to probably sell off some tomorrow. The big sell-off earlier than the week was anticipation of the possibility that the House would not come out with a favorable vote. And that was part of the sell-off because, as I said earlier, the markets are now concerned that the whole Trump agenda will be in jeopardy if they can't get through Obamacare. So,
Dan, I'm going to interrupt you now. You know, all during the presidential campaign, you and I kept hearing that things were going to crater, that Trump was going to crater, and lo and behold, he won. What is your honest opinion? I think that the vote tonight is a foregone conclusion. It's going to pass. What do you think?
Well, as I said earlier, I think it'll be a close vote. there are a lot of people, very conservative Republicans, who don't think that the bill as constituted went far enough. Apparently, there were some major activities going on late into the night last night, and the 25 members of the conservative caucus in the House, which had not been in favor of the bill, their leader came out about 11:30 last night and said, we've made a lot of progress. But I think that, again, we have to understand that the people who are reporting what's going on have an absolute bias against Mr. Trump. And so we have to be very careful that we don't get swayed by what the media is saying, because it isn't necessarily true. One example, and it's an absolutely terrible example, but in a sense, it's also a perfect example. We had a situation in Rockville, Maryland, two nights ago, where a 14-year-old girl was brutally raped and sodomized in a high school men's bathroom by two, one for sure, illegal alien, who were 17 and 18-year-old young men who were placed in the freshman class. Now, Bill O'Reilly went on a tirade last night. I watched him. And he complained the fact that ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, and MSNBC, nobody, none, zero, did any reporting about the attack on this young girl. And his contention was that it was because it was politically not in their best interest to talk about illegal aliens raping this young woman. What's also bizarre is after this rape was reported, the Maryland state legislature passed a law to make Maryland a sanctuary state. Now, the governor of Maryland last night said he was going to veto the bill. But again, we have the selective memory of the media. So we have to be very, very careful, as O'Reilly has been saying for some time, be skeptical of what you hear. So we've got just about a minute left. So watch what happens if the vote passes tonight. Probably a little bit of a relief rally tomorrow. Downside risk to this market is about 20,000 on the Dow. That would give us a 5% correction from the most recent high. So I think it's time for a commercial. And then
Bill?
Yes. What?
Yes, it is. Time for our commercial, and we have a really special guest next.
We'll be right back after this message.
Hate your old fax machine? You can now fax through email. Simply write an email, attach the document, and send. Works with all major email providers. Get rid of the noisy and expensive old fax machine and try Biscom's Cloud Fax. Our solutions are great for businesses of all sizes. Visit Biscom.com for your free trial. That's BISCOM.com.
Dan, I'm going to give you the pleasure of introducing our next guest.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have opportunity to speak with the gentleman who is one of our sponsors. He's also the president and founder of Biscom, Bill Ho. And we thank you, Bill, for joining us today. And welcome to Recalculating.
Well, thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you decided to found Biscom.
Well, actually, I didn't found the company. My father did back in 1986. And I joined more recently back in 2002. So although I am the CEO today, I didn't start there. In fact, you know, my background is in software development. And I worked for a couple different companies that, you know, back during the early dot-com days, back in the mid 90s, you know, I was at Oracle developing some of their software, and then started building kind of these large dynamic web content websites for CNET, and it got me excited about the whole, you know, the web, and I ended up doing my own startup out there called Vault, and we were actually the first mobile centric company that with the cloud storage back end, which, you know, and our idea was people should have access to all their documents, files, and content, regardless of where they are.
Bill, I'm fascinated that your father started the company. So he's the entrepreneur who started Biscom. What do you think your father saw as an entrepreneur? What did he see as the business opportunity?
He was working at Wang at the time, and he had spent 19 years there. And I think the thing that he realized was, and he was involved in this document, you know, a lot of the document management side of things. And I remember him talking about the fax salesperson who came to his office and ended up selling the entire company on these fax machines from Rico, I believe. And he realized that, you know, this is a solution out there, or, you know, back then when fax was heavily used, that is actually pretty inefficient. So he ended up developing the very first fax server that would connect to any network. You know, it was completely networked. So every single desktop was able to fax without having to have a fax machine next to you or have a fax modem installed.
Great concept. I've used it for years. I think it's a great idea. What is your company doing today?
So Biscom, you know, started, its roots were in the fax space, and we are still. It's grown incredibly, actually, you know, over the last 30 years. So we continue to be one of the leading providers in the, especially in the enterprise fax world. But one thing that we've done, and this is kind of where my story was kind of leading up to, which is back in 2002, BizCom acquired my company, and you know, we started to look at, you know, how do we expand BizCom's you know, role here, and not just, you know, helping share faxes, but how do we, you know, more broadly share electronic files, messages, you know, secure email. And that's actually what we ended up building out based on the technology for my startup. And it was, so now BizCom is involved not only in delivering faxes, you know, across the, around the world, but also delivering electronic files. So that could be patient information, financial statements, you know, legal documents, anything that is either, you know, sensitive or confidential, or require, you know, or is extremely large and requires, you know, something you couldn't send through email.
Let me follow up on that subject, because it's something that I have great concern about, especially as more and more information has come out about surveillance on Donald Trump and his transition team last night from the chairman of the House committee. And I'm far from a technology expert. I know how to turn on my computer, and I'm a pretty good at Microsoft Word, but beyond that, and I can use your fax software. As a small business person, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, I'm just trying to see if we can help our listeners. Can you provide a level of security that would not typically be available to our small businessmen and women by using traditional communications method?
Yeah, that's I think you really hit the nail on the head here. You know, one of the things I think, especially for small businesses, is that, you know, they may not have access to some of the technology that you know, provide secure communication. And, you know, I think one thing that is becoming more and more important is, especially as businesses, you know, continue to collaborate more, outsource a lot of their, you know, non-core business, is that they're sharing information out there, and you really can't do it through email, right? I mean, email is ubiquitous, it's easy, but it really isn't very secure. So, you know, our solutions, in particular, our enterprise file sync and share and our file transfer solution also, and secure messaging, you know, give that ability so to these small businesses, so they can use it just like email, but they can transfer any type of information. It's completely secure. It's got the you know, highest levels of encryption, and everything is tracked, so you know exactly who's getting information, who's sending it, and when they're opening it.
So how do you price your business?
Price it based on the number of users who are using the product. So we call them senders. So if we have a, you know, 100 senders, 1,000 senders, it's per user per month.
So you might have a business that has 100 computer workstations. So each of those would be considered a center?
That's right. And usually it's a person attached to that. So.
And do they need any special equipment to get access to BizCom?
Not really. As long as they've you know, a web browser or a mobile phone, smartphone, they can use our solution.
Are you finding any increase in interest by potential customers or existing customers about your encryption technology with all of the stuff that's going on right now?
Yeah, and I think it's driven by a couple of different things. One is obviously, as you mentioned, you know, there's just increased awareness of the fact that there's a lot of things out there are not secure and can be tapped into. So that's certainly a fear that a lot of companies have. A second is also, you know, more regulatory. So, for example, HIPAA is something that, you know, we all experience, you know, in healthcare. And, you know, the whole point is we need to keep our medical information secure, protected, and And so, you know, there aren't a lot of good ways to really share that information. So that's another driver where they're looking for technologies that can really, you know, lock that down and secure it.
I have a foundation that works with veterans. And as we go into the veterans' hospitals, what we find out is that veterans, in many cases, who are visiting at the hospital or are in the hospital if they're an inpatient situation, they may have smartphones, but they can't use the internet feature on their smartphone because the hospital uses the internet to transfer patient records. And I'm wondering if there is a smarter way to do that.
So the veterans themselves are not allowed access to the to that
internet.
The internet. Yeah, you know, that's probably more of a policy rather than a technical issue.
Okay.
But you know, I think VAs are, you know, they do deal with the exact same HIPAA requirements that every other healthcare organization does.
Sure.
In fact, the VA is a pretty big customer of ours, so they use a lot of our technology already.
Good, good. So, go ahead, Don.
No, I was going to follow up on that because I've often seen between my doctors that they fax back and forth to each other my medical records, there's simply not enough security on it. I keep thinking to myself, anybody could intercept that and do with it whatever they want. And it's probably a big area. How did you get into that area, Bill?
Well, healthcare has always been, I think, one of our largest verticals, and mainly because, you know, everyone understands that, you know, patient information, you know, yours and mine, is pretty sensitive, and we don't want that, you know, out there for the world to see. And in fact, you know, HIPAA really even locks it down further, where, you know, if you're a patient, I mean, only the people and the physicians and the nurses and other people who are, you know, actively, you know, working on you are should be allowed to see that information. So. So the big example in healthcare, say in fax, is you have a fax machine sitting in the middle of an emergency room, and a fax comes through, and anyone can go by and pick it up and say, oh, you know, here's Bill Ho's, you know, lab results. So what we've done is, you know, allowed hospitals to deliver that information specifically to the people who need it, and so it's not sitting on a, you know, unsecured platform. And that's you know, one of the big reasons why we're in so many healthcare organizations. More recently, we've worked with some of the large hospitals like Mass General to help them send out patient information. So it doesn't have to be faxed at all. It's all electronic.
So when you look at your services, I was use the example of one of Don's doctors. Is it expensive to implement using your service?
No, it turns out that, you know, if you're using a traditional fax machine, it is extremely expensive to maintain those because of the cost for the physical lines, maintain the machines themselves, the toner and fax. So, you know, fax is no longer what, you know, we don't look at it as a paper document going around. It really is an electronic document. And in fact, it almost never touches paper anymore. But so now you're getting rid of all those kind of hard costs, and so the solution, you know, becomes actually very, you know, there's significant cost savings, but also productivity improvements. And I think that's something that a lot of people look at as well.
Do I need a special computer, or do I have to upgrade my computer to use your software?
No, nothing special. You know, again, we have web interfaces. You may install a client or on your mobile device, so it's actually pretty seamless.
Now, we have a little conflict between Don and myself. He's a PC guy. I'm a Mac guy. Does your your program work on both platforms?
Yeah, it shouldn't matter.
Okay. Bill, I'd like to go in a different direction for a little bit and talk about the company itself. It's a question I often ask entrepreneurs like yours. What are the three factors that you think makes your company so unique and your own management unique?
Well, I think, the first thing is we have a great product, and I think you really need to, have some product or service that is exceptional. That's not everything, right? I mean, people can have great products and great services, but still not, be able to capitalize on it. And I think one of the things that is more important than just the product is having the right people that understand how to develop it, how to sell it, how to market it. So we think a lot about, who's on our team and how do they contribute and add value. And especially for small businesses, it's like ours, every person matters. People wear a lot of different hats. We think of it as, product is extremely important. The people who run the company obviously are very important. And then the third kind of big thing for us is, how do we delight our customers? And, without having some great customers, there's nothing, we really don't have a company. So, one of the things that we're obsessed with is making sure our customers love what we have, love working with us. And, I think more than anything that's really built into the culture of our company.
Bill, who are your major competitors?
So on the fax side, we have companies like OpenText, and they have a fax solution out there. There are all lots of companies that do cloud-based faxing. I compete with our cloud solution. So, there's actually, it seems to me that it's actually that side of the business is actually growing in terms of competitors. On the other side, we have on the file transfer and file syncing, we have companies like Dropbox, right? So that's becoming something really, that we see competing with us. But one thing that we focus on is really on the business side. So, we don't really cater to the consumer. Our target market is purely enterprise and businesses.
Let me ask you.
Let me just identify. We're talking to Bill Ho. He's president of BizCom, one of our sponsors, but also his company offers some of the best products in his field. Just wanted to get and his website is BizCom.com.
So, Bill, I have to ask you this question. There usually is a natural order in businesses, especially small businesses, where dad starts the company and the son comes in somewhere and works his way up to the top, and dad decides to retire, and then the son takes over. What was it like to be acquired by your father?
Actually, it turned out to be great. One of the things that I did with my startup was integrate their fax server into our solution. So it actually made kind of a natural sense once when we got acquired. But I do have to say too, my father, he's still here. He's 87 years old, and he comes into the office every single day.
What did he do? You said he founded this in 87?
86.
86. What did he do before he founded BizCom?
He was at Wang for 19 years. And
I remember you did say that. Okay.
Right. Okay. He headed up their R&D division, and one of the one of the things he worked on was their calculator, and that was a big part of their success, I think.
And he decided he wanted to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I think he's always had it in him. You know, he's a real engineer. He loves being, you know, innovating, and you know, he's a pure engineer, so he just loves building things.
Hmm. Well, Bill, you first, Dan.
I'm just going to say it's wonderful to hear that, because it is the entrepreneurs like you and your dad and Don and myself who make up the business of America, which is business. It's not the Microsofts and the Intels of the world. yeah, they do a lot of business, but there are more of us as small entrepreneurs than any other segment of business in the United States. And it's wonderful to hear a success story like yours and the vision that your father had and the smarts to acquire his son's business, because it sounds like it was a great fit and you've grown it since you've been together.
Dan, the obvious next question is, Bill, are your children in the business?
My daughter's 11, so not yet.
Oh.
But
not that you know.
She's already started programming, so you know, we'll see.
They're starting young, aren't they?
She's writing Python programs now.
Python. What is a Python program?
It's a scripting language. Pretty popular scripting language.
Okay, Don.
We're getting towards the end of our time together. A question I always ask. You've been in business a long time. You've been an entrepreneur. What are the three things you would tell our audience you've learned that you would tell anybody who's in small business and or starting a small business?
Well, I think the you know, the team is extremely important. And you know, I know Jim Collins. I don't know if you read the book Good to Great, but you know, he talks a lot about getting the right people on the bus. And you know, I think that is so important to have that. But, you know, on top of just, you know, making sure you have a great team, you know, I find that the more transparent communication is, you know, and it's pretty easy when you're small, but as you get larger, you know, that communication gets a little harder. So I think that's really important, so everyone understands kind of, you know, what are we doing, where are we going, you know, why is this, you know, why is what we're doing, you know, important, and how does it impact the world? And I think my last piece of advice would just be, you know, be ready to make mistakes, because they're going to happen. But hopefully, you can, you know, what they say is, you know, fail fast and move forward. And yeah.
I have one final question, Bill. What are you, in your crystal ball, what do you think the economy is going to look like in 2017 and beyond?
The economy in general, you know, I really look, you know, think there's a lot of opportunity out there. And one thing about technology is that it continues to, you know, both make our lives easier, but also, you know, opens up a ton of opportunity for small businesses, for companies. And the barriers to entry now are so much lower. You know, you don't, you know, back when I started my company, you know, we had to buy these $1 million, you know, big, you know, storage systems and, you know, all these computers in a big data center. Now it's all, you know, it's all cloud-based. It's people can get started really, really quickly and easily without a lot of expenses.
Well, we've run out of time. Great segment. Thank you for coming on, Bill Ho, who is the president of BizCom, one of our sponsors. Go to their website, bizcom.com. and look and see how they can help you grow your business. Thanks for joining us, Bill, and we'd like to have you back again sometime in the future.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Don. Appreciate you having me on.
All right.
Thank you.
Don't let hackers get your data. Email is insecure and can't handle large files. Instead, use BizCom's secure file transfer product. Military-grade security that's as easy to use as email, and it can handle attachments of any size. Visit BizCom.com for your free trial and make sure your private communications stay private. That's BizCom.com.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. It's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Well, Dan, what have you got to say? We're getting close to the end. It's a very interesting week, and I myself am feeling I've been out in the hinterlands twice this week and talking to people, and I was surprised at how positive people were about the economy. What do you think?
Well, I do think that there is a resurgence, but I do think that even though you disagree with me, I think there is a level of impatience. Not right now so much with Mr. Trump as there is with Congress. And people want to get things done. They want to get moving. They want to do things. They want to take positive steps. And I think there are some people who are a little frustrated that things aren't moving as fast as they were when Mr. Trump first came into office with his executive orders. I do think that the cabinet officers are settling in quickly. I saw Mr. Tillerson was over in China in a matter of days after he became Secretary of State. And so I think we're going to start seeing more pronouncements, more things, activities coming out of the administration that will show progress. I think if we get through this vote tonight favorably, that'll be an uplifting. We know that the Senate is going to play their own game. And it's important that our listeners understand that, as you remind me, to be patient, because new administrations take a while to settle in and start being productive. And I hope that they will be productive. I looked this morning and I just was amazed and at the language that was used on Twitter after the head of the House Foreign Relations Committee reported last night of the intrusion upon the Trump transition team by the Obama team, and you know, the profanity and the vulgar language on Twitter was just amazing. And I wonder what's going through these people's mind. You know, I always believe this, Don, if you couldn't communicate your thoughts or ideas without an expletive, then you got a real serious communications problem. And I see such a degrading of the language of this country on a day-to-day basis. You know, it makes me very, very concerned about what's going on.
You know, Dan, you're right. We've got exactly a minute and a half to the end of the program. And I was going to talk about the fact that I was at a conference yesterday in which there were about 40 small business owners, and they were talking about customer service. And forget about robotic substitution or anything else. What they were concerned about was the incivility of people they were hiring and how they had to spend time retraining, particularly young people, to be polite and to say yes, no, and thank you. It's an amazing word, two words, thank you. They go a long way. And the other words that were bantered about at this conference were, may I help you? You know, you go into a store today, and it's very difficult to get people to come, salespeople come up and give you a hand. Dan, we have 27 seconds. What do you want to say?
I just want to say I think we had a good show today. Our guests were terrific. They gave our listeners a great deal of information. And on that, I'm Dan Perkins.
And this, I'm Dan, I'll say it, Don Mazzella.
And we'll be back next week. So join us on Recalculating.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's show was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, for past shows and special offers. And until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success.